Okay. Item 11. My apologies to our guests that were eating in front of you, but we have time constraints. So, Paul, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Angelo with CEO Consulting, joined by my colleague John Monroe, to present the December 31, 2017 actual evaluation for the Contra Costa County Employees Retirement Association. This will set the contribution rates for the fiscal year that begins next year in 2019. John, did I get that right? Or is it all the way up to 20?
July 1, 2019.
No, July 1, 2019. And what we're going to do, part of the interest of time, I think most of the trustees are familiar with our reports. We're going to start in section one. We're going to skip over the purpose and scope because it's basically to determine the member and the employer contribution rates and also to assess the funded status of the plan. In section one on page double I, you'll see on the right, sorry, in the left margin, a series of reference pages. We urge the trustees to, that's how you read the actual report. At the top there, we have a reference to some new graphs. I will present those in context, but we have a new graphical representation of how you pay off your unfunded liability that we've been putting into all of our actual reports. Some of them, it reveals some pretty surprising stuff. In your case, it's kind of business as usual, but it does show what the county can expect going forward. So we'll touch on that when we look at the unfunded liability. So with that, I'm going to go down to where it says significant issues. And again, this is how we urge you to read the report. We first talk about how the ratio of the the funded ratio increased from 86.5 to 88.5, whereas on a market value basis, it increased from 84.5 to 91%. Could we all just pause and have a moment of silence to talk about your 91% funded ratio? We have been through a lot of tough times with you. We started working for you after the tech bubble burst. And then we recovered for 4 years, and then we had the housing crisis and the Great Recession. We're going to see in this report a couple of dynamics, what happens as a plan starts to recover. And there are a lot of things that used to happen that we didn't like back then, and we said, you know, it is going to change someday. Well, today is that day. So what we're going to do, you'll see where it says references page 36 and page 70. We're going to jump back to page 70, back to page 70, which is in section 3 of the report. There are two pages that I always go through with you in detail. One is the reconciliation of the unfunded liability. How do we get from last year's unfunded to this year's? And the second will be the reconciliation of the employer contribution rate. How do we get from last year's employer contribution rates to this year's? There's a lot of information here on page 70. Start up at the top in the upper right. This is the what would happen if all the assumptions came true, what we call the expected unfunded liability. Last year, the unfunded was $1,187,000. You accrue a normal cost of $220 million. You incur administrative expenses. You collect contributions from the employers and the members. You'll notice that the contribution is around $400 million. And the normal cost is only $220 million. The excess goes to pay down the unfunded as well as interest on the unfunded. So when you net that out, the expected unfunded is $1.1 billion. So you went from $1,187,000 to $1.1 even. That is positive amortization. When you set your amortization policy at 18 years, it was to avoid negative amortization. The reason that that is so positive, and now I'm going to go to the new thing, go to the very next page. After page 70, there's a series of pages. You have a lot of cost groups. It's a complicated plan, but you got a whole series of about 10 pages of cost groups. Well, the one we're going to look at is the total. So jump all the way down to page 82. Okay? This is where you can see where you're, now you have, you've been doing this for a while, so you actually have to go to 83 to see the total. The grand total there, it's $1,050,000. The reason that doesn't equal exactly the $1.1 billion before is because you have some terminated cost groups that are not shown here. But the idea is you can tell where that $1.1 billion of unfunded came from. If you're on page 83, you can see that, well, some of it just happened in the current year. You had an actuarial gain, which reduced the unfunded by $40 million. Let's go to something a little bit uglier. 2 years ago, in 2015, you had an assumption change that increased your unfunded by $111 million. Those new layers are paid off over 18, 17, 16 years based on when they were established. But now go back one page. Go back to page 82. Look at the top of page 82. You restarted your unfunded liability amortization policy in 2007. Okay, and you've been doing layered amortization ever since. The unfunded at that time was amortized over, John, was it 20 back then?
It was about 15 back then. It was originally 20, and it continued. It's the first single layer, it was treated as a single layer before, but it had about 15 years left as of 2007.
Okay, so that was 10 years ago. There are only 5 years left. That means that in 5 years, that layer of unfunded liability will be fully amortized. Now, that looks okay on a table, but let's see if we can do that on a graph. So now we're going to ask you to go to page 85 and 86. Now, these are not immediately obvious to see how these graphs work. You almost have to have the table in front of you, but I will get to the punchline real fast. What we show on page 85, each of those horizontal colored layers is one of those amortization layers. And we've got them color-coded. The assumption changes are in blue. You'll see there's a big one there of that's probably that large increase in unfunded liability that happened a few years ago. That initial unfunded layer is the red one on top. Now, what makes this a little tricky is some years you have gains. Gains reduce the unfunded liability. So you see there's a horizontal black line at zero. Everything below that is an amortization layer, but it's an amortization credit because you had a gain. And so what we do is we net the gains and the losses, the stuff above the line and below the line. That's that black diagonal line going down the middle. So the black line going through the middle there, slanting downward, that's the net of the stuff above zero and the stuff below zero. So that's where we think your unfunded liability is, how it's going to progress until it's paid off out in year 2026. Now, the one that is really more interesting, turn the page. Now, for your plan, this is pretty simple looking. For some others, we have a thing that we call tail volatility. As the layers drop off, the net unfunded payment can go down, then go up. That does not happen here. Look at the black line with the little Z-looking black line in the middle there. That is your net amortization payment. That is everything above the horizontal black line minus the stuff below. The whole point of this is you can see that in the year 2022, that initial unfunded liability, and you also had an initial unfunded credit, those will both start at the same time, those will be fully amortized and the employer's net contribution will drop by the amount of the drop that you see in that zigzag line. So this is something that your employers can start to anticipate. And what's nice about this one is that it's pretty level other than that. We do have some plans where as the layers drop off, it goes up and down and you have to manage that. But this is pretty straightforward. You will see a material drop in the employer payment in the year 2022. And then you will see the next material drop. Now, this is assuming no future gains and losses, of course, which never happens, right? There are going to be new layers. But the real point is, even if we had a big loss next year, which would mean there'd be a big new green layer on here, or if we do the experience analysis, which is also scheduled for next year, suppose we adopted a different longer mortality table or lower discount rate, that would create another blue layer, but that red layer is still going to disappear in 5 years. So even if we add additional layers, it might change when you get to zero, that's out in 2027, it might change and push that out. But what you're not going to see is anything that will avoid that restarted layer from 2007 being fully amortized. So this is the first takeaway, first piece of good news. We're actually seeing progress toward paying off the unfunded, both on a year-by-year basis with the positive amortization, and also we have a big chunk of the unfunded. This is why we like layered amortization. You can tell where each dollar of unfunded came from, and each dollar of unfunded has a date at which it will be fully amortized, no matter what comes on afterwards. So that's really the first main takeaway here, is that we do have an ability to see that we've always had that table. A little hard to tell on the table what the net effect of all those 40 layers is. So I think if we summarize it here in a graphical way, that's kind of helpful.
Now, do you see plan sponsors ever where they know there's a big drop, but they'll say, I want to continue to pay my unfunded? stay at that level, or is it always they're going to go down?
You know, this is just starting to happen. You know, we did all these restarts of unfunded liability over the last 10 years. We actually haven't had anybody get there yet. I think that we've had some conversations where that might happen, but I haven't actually seen it happen yet. Certainly would be possible. Or the employer could say, remember, when we get to your employer contribution rates, you've got some fairly large employer contribution rates, right? You have safety rates that are in 70-75%. You have a general tier at 50% of pay. You know, people throw around the word sustainable. I don't know what sustainable is, but 50% of pay and 75% of pay, that's a lot of budget to put into the pension plan. So it might be, Dave, that when we get to this point, it's simply time to divert those county resources elsewhere. I think that would, you know, if you were at a 20% contribution rate and this was going to take it down to 14 or 11, that would be a different conversation. But with the level of contributions, obviously I am not involved in county finance, but given the level of contributions, it might be that this is just an opportunity to reallocate these resources. Okay, all right, so let's go back to a couple pages. We're going back to where we were doing that reconciliation of the unfunded, which was on page, all together now, 70. So now we've dealt with the expected unfunded, what we thought was going to happen from last year to this year. Now let's look at what actually happened. You had the market value return, John, was it about 12?
It was about 13.3.
About 13.3%. The way the actuaries measure it, that might be a little bit different from how your investment guys measure it. The rate of return on a smooth basis was, I think, around 8%, John?
Eight even? Yep.
Okay. Which is more than your assumed return, okay? About eight. So what that means is the first thing we have is we have an investment return more than expected. That reduces your unfunded by $76 million. You had actual contributions greater than expected due to delay in implementation rates. I've been waiting to be able to have this conversation. You might remember after the 2008 market downturn, okay, because of 5-year smoothing, we had 5 years of losses, which means we had 5 years where the contribution rate went up. Now, as I pointed out, there's an 18-month lag between when we do the valuation when the rates go into effect. That means our computer thinks that these rates in this report are going to go into effect immediately. So if the rate is going up, that means we have 18 months where we don't collect the new rate, which means in the next valuation it shows what we call a contribution loss. We had questions by the trustees, should we build an adjustment for that in the valuation? We have two clients that do that. And we said, well, the thing is, some years when the rates go up, you'll have a contribution loss. Some years when the rates go down, you'll have a contribution gain. And people said, yeah, is that ever going to happen? Well, it happened last year and it happened again this year. So the reason you have a contribution gain is because the new rates from last year's valuation were lower than the one from the year before, and yet you continued to collect those higher rates for 18 months, produced a contribution gain. That's what we're looking at here. So it really does go both ways, and we are now in a period, because we've had good investment returns, we're now in a period where we're actually seeing contribution gains, and I think we'll see that again next year, because the rates in this valuation are lower than the rates in the last valuation. And again, this is why we are comfortable not putting in an adjustment for this, because over time it does balance out. It's just nice to now be in the other side of that conversation, because we did spend 5 years watching the contribution losses. Gain from additional unfunded contributions. John, this is a couple small employers, I think.
Two employers made some small additional contributions, yep.
And now we did have higher than expected individual salary increases. I think we had, John, you told me it was something in the order of about, was it 9% or 7% on the average?
The average pay went up about 7%, yep.
But we also had, I think, a growth in headcount.
Member growth in headcount about 2%.
Right. So yes?
This is during 2017.
During 17, right. And of course, this is where, you know, actuaries and the rest of the world see the world differently. You know, if people live too long, we call that a loss. You know, if the retiree bus on a little outing goes off a bridge, it's It's a very sad day, but we call that a gain. Well, the same is true with salaries, right? If everybody starts getting raises, it makes the plan look more expensive. Remember after 2008, we had 3 or 4 years in a row where we were kicking up salary gains because we were not seeing increases in pay that match the assumed rates. That is now reverse. So really, this whole valuation is sort of the mirror image of the valuations that we saw in the years 2007, 8, 9, 10, after the big market downturn and during the Great Recession.
What was the salary gain for the year again?
Well, in dollars, again, percent, go ahead.
The average pay went up a little over 7%.
Okay. That's average. That's across everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. We always get funny looks whenever we say that you know, average pay went up by a certain percent. You know, it's just data. We take everybody that's in there. But yeah, but we are definitely seeing both in the statistics. We did see increases higher than assumed, and then it shows up in the liability. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We also had higher than expected COLA increases. Now, this is an interesting one. The actual COLA, especially for your older tiers, we have a 3% tier, we have people have banks. Some of them got a 3% COLA because of the COLA banks. Now, you might say, well, it's a 3% tier, you pay a 3% COLA, how can that produce a loss? Now I'm watching Scott here, because this one I'm aiming this right at.
I'm listening,
He knows the answer to this one. When you lowered your assumed rate of inflation from 3% to 2.75, and it was Trustee Graham, I think, that initiated that discussion. This was back in your last experience study. We made the point that this means that in any year, when in the 3% tier, you pay a 3% COLA, that will actually show up as a loss, because we are assuming on the average the COLAs will be 2.75. So this is a little evidence of that. If we were still assuming a 3% price inflation, you would not have seen as large a loss here. So it's just something we point out at the time. It seems a little bit paradoxical, but if you assume inflation that is lower than the maximum in the tier, if you assume 2.75 and you have a maximum of 3% in the tier, anytime you pay the 3%, it's actually going to show up as a loss. So that's what we have showing up here. So again, just you know, that sometimes when you're setting the assumptions, you sort of talk about how that might show up in the future. We like to hook that conversation back when we actually see it here in your data. We had a mortality loss, people living too long, not much though. And then we did have a retirement experience gain of people retiring later than expected. We don't have any explanation why that is, it just comes out of the data, but that's another of the significant items here. And then there's always an other of 9. You net all those together, and we have an additional $40 million of gain from all these other sources, investment and demographics. Net all that together, and that gets you to your new unfunded of the $1,059,000,000. And again, that's the number that was at the total of those amortization layers that we looked at before. So this is really, on one page, everything that happened to the plan from last year to this year. On this, okay, we're now going to move to contribution rates. So we go back in the front. We go back to the front just to find out which page to go to. On Roman 2, at the bottom there, it talks about the average employer rate decrease from 38.08 to 36.07. Now we're going to drill down on that a little bit, but before we do, you see the reference there, page 33. That's in section 2. If we could flip to that page, please. Here you're going to see a lot of the same items that we already saw, plus one that we didn't see before. And again, I always like to pick on this 38.08. There is no one in the plan for whom the employer contribution rate is 38.08%. That person doesn't exist. This is an average of across all the tiers, and we'll look and see in a moment how that breaks down by employers, different employers. But here we see the same items. That investment gain where you earn 8% compared to your assumed rate of 7, that is about 2/3% of pay, reduction in employer contribution rate. Here's the delay of contributions, that contribution gain, that's about 1/6% of pay. Here's the effect of higher than expected individual salary increases, that was a loss, so that's an increase, about 0.5% of pay. Now this is the one we haven't seen before, because not only did individual payroll grow faster than assumed, you actually also added headcount. which means you're now taking your unfunded liability payments, which we calculate in dollars, and you're spreading them over a larger payroll. It doesn't mean that the amounts of the payments are smaller, but since you charge your employers as a percentage of pay, it makes it look like a lower rate. That's a significant amount, 1.25% of pay reduction, simply because those unfunded payments are being spread over a payroll that's 7% larger than we thought, well, that grew by 7%. So that's actually, it's hard to call that a gain because you didn't actually, it doesn't actually reduce your liability, but if you look at the contribution as a rate, it makes it appear smaller. So that's, you'll notice that's the largest number in the column. Now the next one is another good one. People ask us, what about the new PEPRA tiers? You know, pension reform was supposed to address the high cost of pensions. And the thing about a new tier is it takes an entire generation of active members for it to show up. Well, here it is. That 41 basis points, that is the effect of legacy members in the higher cost tiers being replaced by new members in the PEPRA tiers, lower cost PEPRA tiers. When you average that out, that alone shifted your normal cost down by 40 basis points. So this is the one-year effect, gradual one-year effect of the new PEPRA tiers. Again, very material and very measurable. Then we have the other things. There's the COLA. Again, higher than expected, higher than 2.75. Cost about 0.25% of pay. There's those retirees living too long, about 0.25% of pay. Net that all together, total reduction in the average employer contribution rate, 2% of pay. This is, again, after going through the hard years with you all those years, it's nice to come in and say, you know, what goes up actually does come down. That is really most of what I wanted to present. I think I wanted to have John comment for a second. I'm going to ask you to turn back to in the summary section, in section one, on page five, page V, Roman five. This is where you can see, look at the employer rates at the top. That average rate, there's the 36.07. That's that aggregate. I'm sorry, it's the new one. 36.07, that's the aggregate employer rate. The actual employer rates are shown above. You will notice that, you know, for example, for some of the safety tiers, you have contribution rates substantially higher than 36%, 72%. Well, the big one here is the cost group 7, which is county tier A and D, 72%, 76% for Con Fire and East. So those are all factored into the 36.07. You also have rates that are lower. What you'll also see is that not all the rates go down. Most of them do. But John, are there any that we can comment on where we saw a move in the opposite direction? I'm just scanning down this. It does look like most of them did go down.
Cost group 4, their rate went up just a little bit. The Housing Authority, it's a relatively small cost group. I think the main driver for them that was different was that their payroll actually did not grow as much as assumed. So that, like everybody, most everybody else, their payroll went up more than assumed. For this group, their payroll went up less than assumed. So that was one thing that was different for that group. And I would say the payroll growth is probably the biggest driver in some of these rates going down or up is not as much as others, yeah.
Right. But it is worth noticing that we had to look to find anyone that went the other way. So not only did the aggregate rate go down, but pretty much every employer rate group saw a decrease in the employer contribution rate. Now, there's a lot of other stuff in here. We have asset smoothing. You can see the mechanics of that. I will not go through that in detail. We can find that here. But really, I think it's the combination of the amortization policy, your stronger actuarial assumptions. Again, the reason that you had as large an investment gain is because you earned 8%, but you're assuming 7. Okay, so in any year that you earn more than 7, you have a gain. And if you were still at 7.75% or 7.5%, it would not have been as large a gain. Now, of course, when the market goes the other way, again, being at the 7% will give you a relatively lower losses as well. So I think through a tightening of assumptions and through favorable investment markets, we have now 2 years in a row a very positive actual report. I notice the room is not as crowded as it usually is when we have bad news to deliver, right? You know, nobody ever grabbed the paper off the rack because it says, you know, pension costs go down. You know, it just doesn't sell papers. But that's really what we have to present today. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we're open to your questions.
Yeah, Roman numeral 6.
Roman
the,
6.
Under the column, December 31st, 2017, the very bottom across the board.
Page, Gabe?
Sorry.
Roman
numeral 6.
D-I.
Roman 6. Okay. Next page.
Next page, yeah.
Okay. Through the column under December 31st, 2017, at the very bottom, across the board salary increase. What does that represent?
Okay, that's where we have an assumption that average wages grow faster than average prices. So we assume that prices, that the COLA, will go up at 2.75% per year. But when we are predicting how salaries will grow, okay, we assume that salaries will grow 2.75 price inflation plus 50 points of real return. So when we amortize the unfunded liability, we assume payroll will go up by 3.25% per year. 275 price and 50 basis on what we call real wage growth.
Got it.
Don't argue with yes.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm with Contra Costa Fire. I think I know the answer to this, but I also think that the chief's going
to
ask me.
Just at the point of where, do we have to like announce who's speaking and all that? Or?
Just
to, she doesn't have to. She,
okay.
But she are. And a lot of times we do that.
Don't worry about it. So all of our employer rates, you know, basically flat, but they went down slightly. But all of our member rates, again, basically flat, but went up slightly. And I'm assuming that's the effect of the normal cost, because the unfunded liability goes down and affects the employer rates, but the normal cost only affects the member rates. And so but can you give me anything more specific to tell my boss when I go back?
Sure. I'll defer to John in a second, but we have a reconciliation of the employer, of the member rate, but it's only in the aggregate. So, John, is there anything in here where we can look and see what the member rates are by tier that would help?
Yeah, we just go back to that page, Roman numeral 5 there. Some of these have them. Yeah, at the bottom, Roman numeral 5, we have average member rates. And that's probably where you notice the cost group 8, the rates were going up. And the more detailed rates are in the back of the report for the legacy tier and the PEPRA tiers. I think the legacy rates, they don't change much. There's a kind of a COLA rate, and that changes a little bit each year. That went up just slightly, I think. On the PEPRA rates, it's heavily driven by the demographics of the members involved, their entry age, their salaries, stuff like that. And those rates are still moving around a little bit as more and more new people go in those tiers. I think in safety tier D and E, even including the county and the NCON fire, I think there's only 400 people in those tiers right now. So it's still going to move around a little bit depending on those people's demographics.
Now, I want to put John on the spot. Can we find, and if we wanted to see the CON fire member rates separated by tier, so you could see what, you know, how the legacy member rate changed and how the PEPRA rate changed. I suspect we have the new ones in here, but I wonder if they might have to go to last year's report to do a comparison. We're now going, this is the do not try this at home part, down in section 4.
Well, yeah, that's cost group 8, so page 128.
Wow, okay. I've never gone to page 128.
But this only contains the current year table of rates. It's by entry age. Page 128, 129. The basic rates, I don't think they changed, or maybe by one basis point. The COLA rates, I think, went up just very slightly. Members had to pay 50% of the cost of the COLA. So these rates themselves hardly changed. But the group of members, of active members that's involved this year, that's changed. And, you know, maybe somebody retired that was entered at age 20 before, and maybe they're replaced with somebody hired at age 25 that has a higher member rate. I mean, that's the type of thing that can happen. Obviously, a new member would go into the PEPRA tiers, and those are found a little later in the report, page 139, I think. And again, you would have to actually go back to last year's report there to see the difference in rate there, but those are the rates there too.
And so those two pages will show you separately the legacy. Notice for legacy, there's a whole table because they are determined by age of entry, whereas for the PEPRA tiers, there's only one number. So on page 139, all members in the PEPRA tier pay the same rate. So if you had those two pages this year and those two pages from last year's report, you'd be able to see how those changed separately. That's probably as much detail as we can get for you. You're welcome.
Yeah. Something to note, as time goes on, correct me if I'm wrong, as time goes on, as we have more and more PEPRA members, those changes on the demographics will start to normalize. I mean, start to
flatten out.
Thank you.
They'll flatten out, yep.
Correct.
Yeah, it'll be less volatile over time, should be. Yeah.
The most volatility we saw was when we were assuming what the demographics were going to be before we had any members, and then we had actual members.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, I see in a lot of the charts FOSS groups and the members, the employer attributed to a FOSS group. Where can I find the Superior Courts?
Okay, the Superior Courts generally are in the county cost groups. Now, to be a little more specific, Don, help me find a page. I know it's in section 2.
If you go to page 19, the listing of employers there, general employers. If you look in cost group 1 and 2, you'll see the county general is in there, but also the Superior Court is in cost group 1 and 2.
Right. And so then going further, if you go to the next page, page 22, you'll see that the second band down says county general tier 4 courts. Oh, actually, I skipped a page, didn't I? My mistake. I went too far. Page 21 is where it starts. Page 21 at the top, you'll see county general tier 1 with courts, but there aren't that many people left in tier 1. The big one is on, where'd 3 go? It's 44? 24, there we go. Yeah, on page 24 is where the big one is. County, the legacy group, tier 3, the top of page 24, you'll see county general tier 3 with courts. That's where most of the court and most of the county members are. So, and there's also one for tier 4. So for the legacy court members, they're actually scattered among three different places, tier 1, tier 3, and tier, did I get it right? Or is it just 1 and 3?
One and 2. General Tier 1 and General Tier 3 are where the legacy.
Those are legacies, right.
So the Superior Courts are, even though we went through depooling, they're pooled with the county?
Yes, they are. That's an interesting point. I'm not a lawyer, but I understand that there's a statute that says that for the normal cost, there's a requirement that the county cost for pensions and the court cost for pensions have to be the same. We've reviewed that in other systems. Sometimes you'll have a system where the county issues a pension obligation bond and the court does not participate. So in that case, you'll see two different rates, but that's not the case here because the courts are participating in the pension obligation bonds issued by the county. So short answer, counselor, is the county rates and the court rates are pooled, both for normal cost and for unfunded liability. That is true.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. if the courts had a practice that was increasing unfunded liability,
subsidized by the county,
who would be paying for that?
That would be shared by the courts and the rest of the county budget.
In that rate group?
In that rate group, correct.
Do we have any idea what percentage in that big rate group is represented by the county versus the courts population?
Rough idea. I think the courts are about 5% compared to the county.
So the county, my rough language, the county would be picking up 95% of the courts increased in unfunded liability if they were increasing the unfunded liability by some pay practice.
Say in dollars, yes. Now that's not a citable opinion, but that sounds right.
Okay.
That's a legal term, site of employment.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, we went through the whole thing of depooling, and it accomplished a lot of what it was meant to accomplish. It does mean you have a lot of different cost groups, but council makes an interesting point that under statute, and again, I believe it's statute, I defer to council to look it up, but under statute, the courts and the county are pooled, which means that if there's a, whether it's a payroll practice or any other sort of HR practice within the courts that happen to increase pension costs, that would be shared, quite a bit diluted actually as far as the rate goes, because whatever the court's pay is, and John says it's about 5% of that $116 million, it would actually be spread over the entire pooled payroll of $116, but very much would be shared with the courts. And I think your rough justice in numbers is a fair illustration.
Thank you. Anyone else have anything for Siegel? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Impressive.
Good stuff.